Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an irreverent weekly podcast devoted to film and television. On this episode, the Wachowskis might be shutting down. Do we have a right to know what happens with celebrities' private lives? Social media is what companies are basing success on, and our topic this week, TV shows that have gone on for far too long. Let's get on with our show. I kind of wonder, is our show one of them that's gone on for far too long?
Maybe.
People are listening like, your podcast, that's the answer.
Are people listening? That's a good question.
That's right. I can't wait till Rick dies.
Yeah, right.
My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Does that make you Rick? Are you going to die?
Yeah, I just said that. I am Rick. I'm going to die. Why didn't I?
Yeah, you
I
did not say
implied,
that.
Implied. I am implied.
You implied it in
and
your
Amanda
head.
And Amanda Sinks, and she's already talking.
Hello, hello.
Hey, John, you weren't here last week. Did you listen to the Halloween episode?
There's a Halloween episode? I thought we just stopped the show and I'm not here.
Yeah, we come to
the whole world
horrible
stops.
Halt.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty
That sounds about right.
Does it, though? Does it really? Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You know what does come to a halt? Pirates of the Caribbean. Nope. Just kidding. They're just going to keep going and cranking these out. They're rebooting this bad boy. I just want to mention this. This is more of a mention. It's from the writers of Deadpool. They're going to reboot it. And Johnny Depp has apparently officially been dropped as Captain Jack Sparrow. So the reboot will be a different kind of pirate movie. Do we want a pirate movie without Johnny Depp?
It just seems weird that they're doing that.
Seems weird, but I think that it's a bigger door open for even more stories.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Go way back and listen to our podcast when we reviewed the last pirate movie. That movie was good despite Jack Sparrow. It was actually much better when he wasn't in it because he was kind of becoming a cartoon.
Savvy.
Yes, savvy. Yeah. Everybody tries that. Nobody can quite land it like Johnny can. All right. Well, here's an interesting factoid. Lana and Lily Wachowski, the directors of the Matrix trilogy, Sense8, and a bunch of other projects, have closed up their production offices and are uninspired to continue filmmaking currently. Do you want to live in a, John, you're a huge fan. Do you want to live in a world that doesn't have Wachowskis working?
It's starting to sound like that I have been living in a world without Wachowskis working. So I guess I have no choice but to accept it. It's interesting when you read about what's going on with them because they don't have anything in production. The one story that they're working on, according to Karen Wachowski, Lana's wife, is a found footage Iraq war story, which...
What? Okay. Them?
Yeah, them. They're doing a found footage Iraq war story. I don't know why.
Are the soldiers going to be wearing spandex or leather? Because I don't see them doing anything that doesn't require one or the other.
I don't feel like I'm qualified to comment on this.
Have you seen their movies? You're qualified. Every movie they're wearing black leather or spandex.
I don't feel like I'm qualified to answer the question, Aaron.
Okay. All right.
But that project is gestating itself into oblivion. So why not let them close their doors? It's bills they don't need to be paying right now if they're not bringing in any new money or projects.
Well, and I also respect that if they're being honest enough to say we're not inspired right now to give you quality work, that they're taking that step back and saying, okay, we're not going to produce stuff. Because there's plenty of filmmakers who don't know when to quit and they just keep trying to put something out and try to revitalize or capture what was in the bottle before.
Like John Carpenter?
Or like M. Night Shyamalan for many years.
You know what? He recovered, though.
He did recover, but he gave so many crap movies that it was utterly disappointing. And for a lot of people, it almost ruined his credibility as a filmmaker.
No, it ruined his credibility. It didn't almost do anything.
He just has some redemption now.
He just had to build it back up.
Yeah, yeah. So I respect them that they're being honest enough to take that step and say, hey, we're not doing so hot creatively, so we're not going to give you shit production. We value you more.
You're the one saying it. Why are you looking at me like I should know what you are trying to say?
Because I keep getting stumbled over it.
It seems like a very complicated
phrase.
Value
you more.
I value your value. Yeah. I just want them to write. I don't want them to direct.
Yeah.
They are some of the most artistic, original, interesting visionaries that are working in film today. They write some really beautiful stuff. But whenever they direct it, I just feel like there's always just a little bit missing. They nailed it on the first Matrix. They haven't really nailed any. They made some good stuff. I really thought Cloud Atlas was a beautiful movie. They made some clever stuff, but they can't ever seem to just nail it again. It feels like they've missed that window. So I would really like to see somebody else take their words, go through it, wipe out a few of the excess that they tend to lean into. And actually, you know, I think we'd get something really cool, really innovative, really intriguing, really interesting. All those fancy words. I think that we could have that if we would just take them away from the director's seat. That's what I want.
It's hard to separate a filmmaker from their work, though.
No, it's not.
Because if you're used to writing and directing and you give your script.
You mean it's hard for them to give it up?
Yes. Give up their seat to a different director and say, here's my work, here's my vision, but now I don't get to have it acted out upon the way I want it.
You know what? When I go to my job and I get handed $50 million to make something, if the boss says I'm not qualified to do it, I just can't do it. But I'll still take that check.
But they are their boss.
No, they're not the boss. They don't run that. Just because they still work for someone. They work for the WB. They work for whoever, Netflix, whoever they're working
for. Right, but they have a lot more control over their properties and their visions.
I'm saying they don't need that control. That's the problem. They have too much creative control and there's too much excess. That's been the problem I have found with their works. As much as they are innovators, they also can't reel it in. They're like Peter Jackson. They're like, all right, how many endings do we need? We need this many. Let's keep going.
Well, just and I'm not disagreeing things. With you on that. I'm just saying it's going to, at this point, for how many years they've been in the game, it's really hard to get somebody who's so used to having the control to say, oh no, here's my work. Go ahead and do with it as your vision pleases. So getting them to take that step back, even as, you know, we may wish them to do just writing, I don't think that that's really ever going to be an option.
Well, in the case of something like Sense8, something that I actually really love and adore, they push some envelopes a little too far to the point where you have to be almost more than open-minded to accept some of the stuff that's happening there. Like, open-minded isn't enough words to describe what you have to be able to be okay with some of the things that happen in Sense8. But there's a lot of sexual content that people with open minds don't want to see. They don't like, we talked about this before or once before, where do we think that sex on the screen is as necessary as it used to be? And I'm starting to lean towards, no, it's not as necessary because it doesn't really tell the story any more than before. And now it's more of an affront than it is something that tantalizes or something that tells the story. It's more insulting because now you're just cheating to use some other feelings to tell your story, and that's not right.
Don't you think Sense8 was really convoluted, though? That was yes, they did some really, they went out there sexually in that show, which is fine. I mean, they wanted to push some envelopes, and they did. They created new envelopes and pushed those, too. It was, my issue with that whole show was more about, it's so convoluted. It just had too much, it was trying so hard to be too many things at once, and it just made it hard to digest the story. Don't you think, John, or you don't see it that way?
No, I didn't find the story to be convoluted at all. I found it to be deep, and it was heavy, but not convoluted. It was easy to follow, and that's, unless I'm taking the meaning of convoluted the wrong way. As long as you started,
I was just like, so many threads were going on. At some point, it feels like if you have too many threads, it starts to unravel. And that's what I felt like it was trying to be the highest thread count for a pillowcase you could ever have. And instead, I just wanted to lay on the regular pillow. I didn't want to lay on that pillowcase anymore. There was too much going on.
Well,
does that analogy work?
It was a weird analogy.
It sort of works. It sort of works. But
sort of works. The reason why feels like what Sense8 was. It sort of worked. The analogy kind of worked.
The thing about Sense8 to me that I ran into the most when I was trying to share it with friends and everything is that it wasn't the convoluted story, as you're calling it. It wasn't those sorts of things. It was really like the sex aspects of it is what turned people off to it. And that's what I thought was unfortunate. It's something that I could accept and I was fine with, but there are a lot of people who don't need to like be wiping their face about because of what just happened on their screen, because whatever happened on the screen just splattered all over their face.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, let's talk about work yesterday. Okay, let me take out this vibrator, and I'm just going to have it in the backdrop. You figure out where it goes.
Right.
That's really what a lot of their show was.
Right.
It was that just crazy. Obscure, outrageous, and crazy. Yeah. Interesting. Well, I'm sure they'll come back. People that are that innovative, that creative, do not just go away. So we'll see what happens with them. Now, Amanda wanted to talk about this, that actors are celebrities and more people seem to want to know everything about their personal lives. Every interview they ask personal questions, et cetera, et cetera. But many of them don't share. And some people see that as slighting their fans. So I just kind of want to know, do you think celebrities should share their personal lives? Is it really any business of ours just because we bought a ticket? I mean, we really don't do celebrity talk or anything else, but I mean, this was something you wanted to talk about. So
yeah, it came up in a conversation with a group of my friends. So it just kind of sparked an interesting conversation and debate between the two of us, a healthy debate, I think. And it made me interested to see.
Did you guys fight?
No, I wouldn't call it it's a healthy debate. We had opposing views.
Did you walk away as friends, or did
we still talk
every
day.
One of you bloody, and they didn't get up?
No.
Because that's how fights should go.
That's why it was a debate, not a fight or an argument.
Okay.
So, you know, we have different opinions, and my opinion is just more that even if they accept an interview, a celebrity, whether it be a director, or a writer, an actor, if they accept an interview, there are certain things that more than likely they've probably told their person to their publicist to notify that are off bounds, like out of boundaries, or that they don't want to discuss.
These are off limits. Yeah. I've done many interviews and that once in a while will come up.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if it comes up in the conversation as a journalist, you have to understand that if they say no, they say no, and now you have to move on to something else. And so the conversation really then becomes, is that journalist or are we the consumers of that journalism? Do we have an entitlement to that information? And I don't think that we do. I think it's a great gift for us to be able to get an insight into that celebrity's life, because of course we want to connect on a more personal level and understand them more deeply. But it's not like they're sharing it to a group of friends. They're sharing it to millions of people. So I don't feel slighted when somebody wants to keep their personal life personal. I respect it actually a little bit more because they're willing to make it about their art and not about themselves. So do you guys feel differently? Do you feel like we still have some right to knowing even if the art was impacted by their personal life? Do we have the right to know that?
I'm going to say no. There was a period in my life where I might have been paying attention to stuff like this. I think but the way I would call it is that boredom had left me infected with the want to just read articles about how these people lead their lives. And it was really just boredom, but it was more of an infection than it was something that I was doing because I was honestly interested in what they were doing. If in the real world, if you go and you talk to somebody and you're interviewing with a company and they start asking you personal questions, that's not right. They can't necessarily do things like ask you, what are you doing in your private time? What kind of things like that? And if it affects you on top of that, I don't think anyone has a right to hold that against you when it comes to your professional life. And this is the stars and people who act, they're doing something professionally. Asking them what they do in their home life, and if they don't want to talk about it, they have every right to be, hey, that's not cool. I don't want to go into that because it's not important. It's not necessary. And we need to go back to a time when like stars would go with like, I think it was Cary Grant or somebody like that. Anytime a movie of his came out, because he was so bad in public, they would actually send him on a hunting trip or something. So we need to go back to that time.
I really just don't care. I don't care. I have zero interest in somebody. As long as they're not doing something criminal or whatever, mm-hmm. I just don't care. I try to care. I care about, you know, I'm a fan of acting. I'm not a fan of celebrity. I just don't care about your personal life. And that's why we never talk about it on this show, because I just don't care. And if somebody is reporting... Okay, one thing. I don't agree with giving a list of questions that you can't ask. I don't agree with that, simply put. Because I've done interviews. We've done them a lot for the podcast and whatnot. And I never give questions ahead of time. I've canceled interviews because they wanted them. Many people will say, hey, I got to have the questions ahead of time. Well, then I don't really want to talk to you. It's just, I'm sorry. It's just not that important to me. If you can't have a natural, engaging conversation, and it's about the art. It's, to me, it should always be about the art. I don't care about who you're dating or... unless it relates to the project you're working on, I don't care about your past alcoholism. I don't care about whatever you're dealing with. Those are your issues. Just like my issues are my issues. You're an actor. You're a writer. You're a director. Whatever you are, That is your business. You don't want to talk about it. Don't talk about it. Doesn't affect me one way or another. Well, there's a reason why we've never brought up celebrity gossip and all that jive on the show, because it doesn't belong here. It's supposed to be about movies and TV and things we love. And that's just tabloid crap.
Well, let me clarify the context of this conversation, because I feel like it's kind of going a little bit off from what the intention was.
There's literally nothing you could tell me that would make
Let me finish saying what I was going to say.
Okay.
So the journalist in this particular article, the writer, she was trying to understand inspiration for this filmmaker's project. It wasn't necessarily like, who are you dating or how are your children? It was talking about something that was public knowledge. You know, this person's family.
You can say their name. It's public. It's Bradley
Yeah, that's
Cooper.
True. Yeah, it's a Bradley Cooper article. And apparently his father had died. And, you know, this movie, you know, Star is Born kind of revolves around fatherhood a little bit. And there's just a lot of different aspects, and then also addiction. And so that was a part of Bradley Cooper's life, I guess. I didn't know that. And so this writer tried to bring it up to him in the interview, and I think he was pretty respectful and was just like, you know, it's not really something that I want to talk about, because he understands that when you give the media that, he has no control over saying like, hey,
yeah, it's your story.
We
you
can rework that section.
And he's not wrong.
Right. Right. So and I understand that. And the other side of it was the opposition was, you know, that he agreed to do this interview, which the writer did still, I think, keep it more to the art, but she definitely entangled his personal life into it. So it's not necessarily like gossip, like tell me who you're with and tell me about your wife and everything, because he doesn't share that stuff as publicly. But it was about, you know, inspiration for this film. But that still goes for me into his personal life.
As soon as you take it, if you ask the question because you think it relates to the art and they act like, and I read the interview, he did nothing wrong. He just kind of diverted it and said, you know, that's personal. I don't really want to talk about it. You know, you can take it and you can rewrap it and you can package that any way you want. I have no control of the narrative. If I'm directing or writing, I control the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he was saying. Totally understand where he's coming from. That's the part where the reporter stops.
Mm-hmm.
Anything after that, if they keep pushing it, that's tabloid.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, so I still don't care.
And it's totally free for them. I don't see any issue with them asking the question, because you can't know if it's going to be okay or not until you ask the question.
I don't care if he is an alcoholic. Then he goes home and he gets hammered after the premiere. I don't care. The movie's done. That's all I care about. What the movie show. As long as he doesn't hurt anyone but himself, I don't care. Now, hurt someone else, then I'm interested, simply because as a fan, then that can impact, you know, how you see that person in other roles, you know? So I prefer that nothing bad ever happens, but it does happen from time to time. I just don't want to get involved in all that personal. God, why do people care about that?
I don't know.
Do you think people sit around and want to know about our personal life? We're doing a semi-public thing. Do you think people are sitting around going, hey, I wonder.
We are not Bradley Cooper.
I wonder what John, Amanda, and Aaron are doing this weekend.
Watching movies. Don't you listen to the podcast? Yeah. That's all we do.
It's pretty much, you know, the extent of it. I'll never understand it.
All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, people want to know, live vicariously through other people.
I guess.
I'm not one of them. All right. Well, just because I don't care doesn't mean that it's, you know, not a thing. Luke Cage and Iron Fist, though, they've both been canceled by Netflix. Bye. Oh, I was just getting ready to watch those season twos, and then I wasn't. But Business Insider ran a piece that essentially said social media and the amount a season of a show gets talked about largely determines if a show will get renewed. I just find it fascinating that we're at a point where, because of streaming and everything else, it's not so much about ratings anymore. It's about social media. The buzz is creating the deciding factor for when shows get renewed or if they get renewed. What do you think about that, John? You're a big fan of these shows, I know, and they got canceled. So I know deep in your heart of hearts, you're probably a little sad.
I'm actually more disappointed for Iron Fist than I am for Luke Cage. Luke Cage, at this point, I could take or leave. Iron Fist finished on a note where it had some really great possibilities coming to it. And this season's a huge improvement over the first. So as far as what I think, while I was gone, I got to experience some really cool technology that some of these companies that I work with do. And one of those technologies is something that I'm sure that some of these, their data aggregators that I'm sure that Netflix and Prime and all these other guys are using to collect information. And they can just set it up so that not only does it find the conversations, but it pulls out keywords and deciphers what they all mean. And they come up with some sort of metric as to how well the show is doing based off of that. In my mind, if they pull off enough information or enough conversations, they can use it as a way to course correct shows like they did with Iron Fist. It was just too little too late with that show. They lost a lot of face with the first season, and there was a lot to do to buy back the second season, and they didn't do enough.
And to give people introspect, when we're talking about social media, the impact, like hashtagging, they're actually keeping track of how many hundreds of thousands of tweets or posts or anything else that are hashtagging the crap out of their product. And that's generating their decisions in terms of whether or not they're going to continue with the show. Like Iron Fist did really well the first season, didn't do so well this current season. And then Daredevil has done steadily decent, but it hasn't, you know, it's not quite, the season three hasn't done quite as much as season two and season one. So they're looking at social media as the deciding factor on whether or not they bring a show back. I find it fascinating because we've thought for years that Nielsen's ratings determine that, when really Netflix is looking at word of mouth to generate traffic to bring people back to Netflix. And that's just a fascinating thing. That doesn't necessarily mean they're streaming the crap out of it. It just means people are talking about it. Buzz is really what they're banking on.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, there's social media has a huge market right now. That's why all of the social media platforms are working so hard to generate more ad promotions and constantly revisiting and revamping what they have set up. We see how much social media impacts careers for people in Hollywood.
Yeah, man, one wrong tweet, you gone.
Yeah, exactly. Bye. So why it doesn't surprise me at all that positively people having good buzz about a show. I mean, that's probably what's impacted some of the shows that have been picked up or renewed by a different network is all of the Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a great example. All of the buzz that went around that show and people were like, no, I don't want this to end. Timeless, another example. That buzz that people have
about
it. Yeah,
that show has died like three times or something.
And it keeps coming back. Yeah, it's timeless.
Oh, God. Why didn't I just like line it up like that?
So, but those sorts of things, it doesn't surprise me because that's how we get information about what people are interested in now. We don't have the same.
Yeah, we don't talk. We just hashtag.
We do. Yeah.
Hashtag don't talk.
Well, and that's people are getting more. They're not scrolling through cable networks, finding a show. How we're finding new shows because we're overwhelmed in the amount of content that we have.
Trending.
Is by people who are like, hey, this is really good. You should check it out. So when they have that buzz, people are more likely to talk and watch it. I don't think The Haunting of Hill House would have been as exceptionally amazing, like in terms of how many people have watched it, if it weren't for the word of mouth, because it didn't have.
I forgot it was even on until word of mouth started going crazy over that show.
Yeah. And because, I mean, before it came out, there was a little bit of chatter about it that it was coming out. But people weren't like, man, this is going to be such an amazing series. I can't wait.
I watched it solely because of word of mouth.
Yeah.
And if I wouldn't have seen it, hashtags everywhere, I wouldn't have given it a shot because I was kind of, I don't really need to watch that Creaky Mansion show. It's going to be the same one I've seen 100 times.
And it totally wasn't. But Netflix is banking on
acting's
that.
Acting's sketchy, but the show was pretty good.
Story makes up for it. So it's not surprising to me.
But you're of the younger generation. I mean, John and I, we're kind of, you know, get off my lawn. We're closer to that generation than you are. You young people, you youngins, you kids.
I don't know that I really fit in with this.
Mid-20s.
I'm super old.
Mid-20s.
Yeah.
Your generation, do you look at social media to determine what you're going to watch? More so than, like, I personally look at, you know, who's in it, who's writing it, who's directing it, what's the plot? You know, I look at all those things. Or do you look more at word of mouth? Like, are you more likely to watch something because of what you knew about it previously versus what you see on the internet? That's, I guess, the question I'm asking.
I don't really think I'm qualified. I feel like I really don't.
You're mid-20s. You qualify.
Man, I guess so. I really don't know. I have a very old soul. I don't know that I think
exactly. Let's say
the
it's
same.
Okay. Hear me out. It's Friday night.
Right.
Bill's been paid. So you're sitting around. You're like, you know what? I got 2 hours to kill. I can either watch this movie that I kind of want to see because I know what it's about. I know who's in it. It'll probably be decent. Or there's this other one that's on Netflix that people keep talking about. And regardless of how much anything costs or whatever, they're both free. So mm-hmm. they're both free. One's got a lot of work. A couple of your friends are like raving about it, but then you got this other one that you've kind of been wanting to see. Which one do you choose?
Both.
No, you got 2 hours. You want to pick one. Which one do you do? Based on that.
And the movie that I want to see, it has a bunch of people that I'm interested in, like casting that I really like.
It's word of mouth versus previous knowledge.
Man, that's really tough. I don't know. Word of mouth can definitely impact and change. I don't want to say it can change it necessarily.
Can you not make a decision? Is that like impossible? Or?
Honestly, I would literally just watch both.
I would actually wager to guess that she doesn't know how the decision is made when it happens, because when your feed is bumping with one thing, you start seeing it over and over and over again, but you don't realize that eventually you're going to be like, hey, you know what? This here it is right here. And everyone seems to be talking about it. No, she's just going to watch whatever it seems like is pumping in her feed. That's what happens to a lot of people. It ends up being more subliminal than anything else because your feed just starts bumping with it. So I would wager to guess the reason why she can't answer the question is because she doesn't know how to.
Yeah.
Because it happens subliminally.
I think a lot of it is whatever content I'm seeing about. Like, if we're in the Hollywood Outsider Facebook group, that's where I get most of my word of mouth suggestions. If something is terrible and I see
a lot of plug it. Yeah.
No, for real. I stay on Facebook because of that group.
Wink, wink. Way to plug it.
I've disconnected from Facebook and then gone back because of the group. And people have really good suggestions. Or they'll say, look, I watched this. This is atrocious. Don't see it. And so that can affect me where it's like I start to see the same people that I have similar likings to where I'm like, yeah, I trust your opinion. So now I won't watch that, or I'll push it off so I can see something else, or maybe something they really like I'll put to the top of my list.
Just so you guys know, I'm way more curious when people say that. This thing is abysmal. Why is it abysmal? I want to check. That's quite the adjective you chose on that one. I got
to
check.
So if you ever want Aaron to watch something, you should tell him it's a dumpster fire. He'll watch it in 2 seconds.
Probably more likely to watch it than you will. You know, it's the most amazing thing ever. Oh, sure it is, John. Sure it is. No, it's abysmal. Really?
Okay. I'm going to try this next time. Hocus Pocus is terrible. What do you mean?
I plan on watching this thing.
You know, the Goldbergs is a garbage show, Aaron.
I feel like he's obligated to now that he's had the photo with them.
Yeah, I was out on the blacklist lot and I met the JTP?
JTP!
I don't know what that means, but they...
John's toilet paper?
little inside scoop. So we're walking down Sony Pictures lot and we come by these kids and I'm with Troy Heinrichs, who I do the Blacklist Exposed podcast with. Sorry, it's a quick sidebar. I'll try to be quick since he brought it up. And these kids walk by and he's like, oh, we got to get a picture with them. I'm like, why? I don't know who they are. He's like, it's the JTP. And then these kids are really excited that he knows them. And they're like having this excited banter back and forth. And I'm just sitting there going, okay, cool. And he's like, can I get a picture with you? Because my kids will love it. And I'm like, well, I want to get in the picture too, because apparently they're important. And I get in the picture and everything else. And I send it. And people are like losing their mind. Everybody's saying, JTP, JTP. And I'm like, I still don't know who these kids are.
You had to Google it.
I don't know who they are. They were wonderful guys. They really were. Really.
You
really
keep saying kids like they're not 30 years old.
They're not.
Are they?
If they are, that would be shocking to me because they look 16, 17 years
really?
Old.
Really? Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know the cast was so young for that show.
I mean, but they were shooting heroin and drinking, so they're probably older than
you. You were very close to the Breaking Bad van.
That's gossip. It's not true. Those kids were sweet. Wait, all right. What were we talking about? Social media or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Social media. And how Amanda can't make a decision as to what she's watching because she doesn't realize it's happening to her subliminally.
I'm going to answer this question, though.
I already did.
He did.
No, let me.
He spoke for you like it's 1956.
Right.
Do you want to do my vote for me too on November 6th?
He sure does.
You know what? I'm pretty sure the dishwasher is broken too.
Oh. Do you want a sandwich with that? Oh
God, I died. I'm sorry. Okay, continue.
Oh man. All right.
That's John Davenport, or that's John at the HollywoodOutsider.com.
Yeah, but give him his last name too so they can find him and harass him. I hope your wife listens to this. I nearly killed Aaron
with that one.
I still can't breathe.
If it's something that I've already decided I really want to watch for whatever the reason may be, maybe I've just heard really good things about it, maybe I like the casting, whatever, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it. But the chances of me not watching something that people whose opinions I trust tell me this is something you should watch, maybe I'll try their suggestion first. I don't know. That's where I think John's thing will come in, is which I watch first. But I will take it into consideration if it's from somebody that I trust. If it's just a hashtag on Twitter, no. No, no, no. Because
hashtags.
Because they come from the Kim Kardashian family. Those people watch those reality shows. What?
We don't mention Kardashians on this podcast ever.
That's not
in a good way.
Doesn't matter.
What's next? You're going to start talking about Kanye? Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, we do not bring names.
Jesus.
Now everything goes off into a...
We're in the bad place.
Yes. Yeah.
But when it comes to reality shows, The Bachelor and Bachelorette is a great example. You see those hashtags all the time and people are constantly like, this is such an amazing show.
I don't see that.
You do.
I don't see it.
Well, I do. And it's really frustrating. I don't ever watch any reality shows because I don't like them. That word of mouth would never get me to reconsider my opinion because it's not my thing. But if it's something I think might be up my alley or from someone that I trust, for sure I'm going to check it out.
John, do you sway based on hashtag word of mouth, or is it your opinion's already made up? Because we're in the older generation, so we're kind of stuck in our ways in a way.
If I see something, I don't pay attention to Twitter enough. I only use Twitter just long enough to like throw some words out there and run away. Because that's how I think Twitter should be used.
That's pretty much how it is. Say mean things, run away.
Right. But as the rest of my feed, yeah, things pop up. It'll either hit me subliminally and make me want to check it out, or I will be, no, I'm not going to do that. There's a couple, and it depends, and it really depends on who's in it, what's going on, that sort of thing. But I'm not beyond saying that, sure, something will show up in my feed enough times to make me go, maybe I should look at that.
I swear you just said, I am not Beyonce.
I didn't hear it until you said that, and now I'm re-listening to it in my head.
That's all I'm hearing.
Replay this 15 seconds back, people.
Oh man, I feel like
it's all funny game until I break out in a lemonade.
See, I probably would have said that already have my, because I keep up with so much film and TV. I know what I want to see, but I'll be honest, word of mouth probably sways me more nowadays. There's just so much content. The more and more I see of something and people giving a rave reviews, the more I'm going to give it a chance.
Yeah.
Unless it's something I suggest to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, are we still in the Hocus Pocus thing?
No, I'm talking about TV shows that I've told you I know you would like.
I have tried every one of them I don't like them. I don't like Parks and Rec and I don't like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
No, not even about those shows. Talking about even revisiting seasons of a show that you already invested in.
How many shows do you have?
Riverdale.
I don't.
Season two.
I didn't like it.
You didn't even see season two.
I like the first.
Doesn't need to.
I watched like two or three episodes and I was bored senseless. At some point, you got to get on with your life.
13 Reasons Why, season two.
First episode, bored out of my mind.
But you're not.
I didn't even touch season two of that one. So
it hit
shame
to me.
For shame.
To me, it had you know what? It's the Heroes effect. Heroes is a perfect example of what 13 Reasons Why is. Okay. I think I have it right. It's because it's one of those shows. The first season was absolutely perfect.
Agreed.
Didn't need any more. Didn't want any more. And whatever came after it was subpar compared to what originally came. So as I watched that first episode, by the time it was over, I didn't want to dilute my feelings about this show anymore. So I stopped. Now it might very well. It could turn out to be fantastic. But at that moment, the end of the episode, I had a hard time going back to it because I'm like, no, it's a Heroes thing. I don't want to watch anymore because I don't want to ruin what I loved about the first season. And I feel like this is making me do that.
For me, it's a combination of two things. I agree with you wholeheartedly about the Heroes thing. Yeah, the show ended on such a note that it did not need to go any further. I don't need to know anything more about those people, what's going on.
Perfect ending.
It was a perfect ending. At the same time, I think that show was the reason why I started backing off a lot of heavy stuff because it had an effect on me where I was, I just didn't have the space to be able to watch something anywhere near that again for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
See, that's a reason.
Okay, well, I had it's one reason why. Here's 12 more.
Oh, look at you trying to be funny.
You're
so proud of that. Look, I wish people could see your smile right now. You're like, oh my God, I was so good.
JTP. Man, let's go to a game called You Can Do It.
Oh, that reminds me of the guy from the Adam Sandler movies.
That's where you got it from.
Literally where I got it from.
You can do it.
What's his name?
You can do it. Oh, Rob Schneider.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's him. Yep.
I'm sure that's not his character's name, but.
No, because it changes in every movie.
Actually, I believe his professional name is I will do anything for Adam Sandler to put me in a movie. Whatever Adam Sandler needs, I will do it.
Even on his comedy specials. Apparently. Yeah, he showed up on.
By the way, John, have you seen 100% Fresh, Adam Sandler's new comedy special?
I have not yet. I was going to until you told me Rob Schneider's on it. And I don't know.
He's
if
in
I
it for
now.
3 minutes. Watch
it's
it.
So minimal.
It is a perfect ADD special because every little bit is like 3 minutes long. And it's just like, it's almost like watching YouTube clips. And that's what people do now.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's funny. The catchy songs.
I'm sure a lot of people hate it. I don't care.
No,
I had
it's 100% Fresh.
I think that's just funny. That's just funny. All right. You can do it.
Phone, wallet, keys. All right. So each host is going to take a movie that they genuinely believe is an awful film and find one legitimately positive element to it. We can't be snarky or sarcastic. I know it's like you guys are taken out of your element. Mm. We have to be legitimately positive here.
Yeah. See, okay. We're doing things to
we're
turn.
We're being positive.
We're turning it.
Yeah. You know,
everybody's always like,
trying to be good people. Throw out some positive energy. I get it. I can do this.
Take a garbage movie and make it sound better.
Yeah.
All right, so when it comes to a garbage movie, because I'm just going to automatically assume I go first.
Yep, you do.
The one that comes to mind the most is In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale. That movie is a dumpster fire.
Is that Jason Statham?
Jason Statham, Ron Perlman, Christina Locken.
Oh, Uwe Boll.
Boll is the director of it. Somehow they got Burt Reynolds to be in it for a good portion of it. It's like everything about it is a movie that shouldn't work, and it comes nowhere near working. However, Ron Perlman shows up to work, and he shows up and he is Ron Perlman-ing his way through that whole movie, and he is fantastic. Jason Statham, I don't think he says more than two lines, and he is judo chopping his way through mystical beasts left and right. Those two aspects of that one movie don't make it a good movie either way. But hey, people showed up to work. And that was, I think, a good thing about it.
Hey, that works.
Yeah, that's good. Aaron, what about you? How are you going to present optimism here?
I've never watched the whole movie. I only saw minutes of that one.
I've never seen it.
Well, it's Statham. So, I mean, there's abs. Mm. There's that.
Mm-hmm.
And
little bald head.
Yeah. I got to tell you, little bald head, what are you looking at?
He's got a big bald head.
That's true. Rub the genie. Yeah.
So the night I watched that with my wife, and she didn't make it past the first 5 minutes before she's like, I'm going to bed.
Mm.
And back in these days, I used to be able to invest myself into something. I just wasted 5 minutes watching it. I better just watch the whole thing just so that those 5 minutes aren't wasted. I really hate myself.
Yeah, you never get it back. You know, sometimes time is more important. You really should weigh that. So I decided this new game that we're doing, I would go straight for my worst movie ever, because why not?
Same thing. That's what I did.
The Fountain. I hate The Fountain. I absolutely hate The Fountain. I don't use that word much, but I hate that movie. It's such a pretentious, pompous, nonsensical stab at metaphorical storytelling. And I just bleh. It deserves to get a cinematic abortion. Like, it just deserves to be taken out of the world. However, the art design and cinematography are truly stunning. It's an absolute, even though it annoyed me on nearly every possible level, visually, it is a stunning film to watch.
Yes.
There.
Positive.
I'm actually very proud of you.
I tried. It looks beautiful. It's dumb.
I know that
as hell,
wasn't easy for you.
But it's beautiful. It looks beautiful.
So just mute it the whole time.
Did part of your soul die a little bit?
No, I've always thought it's, you know, visually, it was a stunning film. It's just, it's so pompous, it's hard to get past that without, you know, just getting mad at it.
That's fair.
It's basically like walking around. You know, you're going to Walmart. You just want to go into Walmart and grab something quick. And you got some dude in the parking lot with an art canvas. And he's just sitting there showing you his painting that he worked all weekend on. And you're trying to be nice to him and just say, hey, it looks pretty, even though it's kind of garbage. But you can't really say that because it'll just ruin his day. But he won't let you get into Walmart. So it's just finally like, your stupid canvas is garbage. And then you have to step on it. That's what the fountain is.
Is this a real life example? Because this is a very peculiar situation to have happen.
It's a metaphorical situation.
Okay.
What's your movie? I'm sorry. I might need therapy.
So speaking of dumpster fires and M. Night Shyamalan ruining his reputation for a very long time.
Wow, you brought it all the way around, huh?
Lady in the Water. The worst
movie. I actually like that movie.
Nope. Has ever existed.
She just said nope. Just kept moving.
Quite possibly one of the dumbest movies I've ever watched in my entire life, but definitely the worst movie I've ever watched in my entire life. However, It does have wonderful specks of romance, which I do like romance in my movies sometimes. Not necessarily here, but okay.
A little love.
There's romance in that movie?
There's supposed to be. It's all for love. And it has a really good cast. So we have Bryce Dallas Howard and we have Paul Giamatti. And how can you go wrong with those two? Except when you do.
Yeah, it's not really. I think you need to try a little harder on this one.
But.
Yeah, you actually sound snarky.
Yeah, just kind of sound snarky. We really brought the honesty and the positivity. So you need to bring it.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, dishwater hands kind of do this to you, huh?
Gets me all messed up, man. Yeah. If you take this movie, replace the script, and leave the people in it, it would be really great.
No. That's that's not taking something from the actual film. That's just saying the people that are in it are great. Well, everybody in the fountain is great. You got to look at the whole movie. So give us something positive for the movie.
Amanda, you suck at your game. It has romance elements and that there's a good cast.
All right. Let's stay with romance element. Like, did the romance work for you? See, you're missing the whole, you're missing the point.
I'm trying my best here.
I'm just saying, John and I had no problem with this. It seems like you're struggling a little bit.
I think she's just making stuff up to like, because I don't remember there being an actual romance.
If you even look up the synopsis, it talks to you about the romance. Are you remembering a different movie?
No, I'm remembering the exact movies. He protected her, sure, and he looked out for her.
Because he fell in love with her.
Well, deeply in love with her. But it wasn't like, I want to hump her love. It was more like he wanted to take care of her kind of love.
Because he was in love with her. He was helping her because of that.
But you would have to be saying that you liked that aspect of the film itself.
You're really bad at this, Amanda.
I respect that his character had motives outside of his own.
I have my chin in my hand right now. I'm just enjoying this one.
I respect that his character had motives to help someone beyond his own needs. I do respect. He wanted to help someone, and he got no benefit out of it.
Okay. There we go. See, it's not that hard. Don't say anything else, because then you ruin it.
He saw my mouth open and he was like, shut up.
If you say anything else, you ruin it. Well done. Eventually.
We got there.
All right. Patreon. If you're a Patreon supporter, you can help us at, or if you want to be a Patreon supporter, you can help us at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. There are bonus episodes available for certain tiers, so check that out. I don't want to hammer on this too long, but it does really help the show out, helps pay the bills, and we do appreciate it. And there's hopefully some benefit for you as well. We're going to do a bad movie night, which should be coming out soon, for Queen of the Damned.
Yes!
With Aaliyah.
Yep.
Let's simmer down on the
look,
yes.
Our listener, Paula, has noted that this was her top recommendation to someone for a vampire movie.
Really?
In the Facebook group, it sure was today.
Well, kudos, Paula. Like, she just pulled it out of her.
That was her suggestion. I was like, well, hey, there may or may not be a bad movie night coming up on this.
I don't know if Paula should be recommending vampire movies anymore.
Paula, show us on the doll where somebody made you angry. Just show us on the doll where they hurt you.
On the doll.
We've got a couple of reviews real quick. One is called Curvature. Now, the film was directed by Diego Jalavis, who reached out to us as an independent filmmaker and asked us, for better or worse, if we would review his film, which is now available on Amazon Prime, which I appreciate because you're rolling the dice on that, because you never know. This could go anyway. It really could.
And we're very honest here.
So here we go. Curvature. While grieving the suicide of her husband, Wells, Helen receives a mysterious phone call. I'm not going to say anything more about that, but let's just say something happens and she might need to prevent something else. So there's a mystery involved here. I don't want to say anything more about that because there's a lot going on with the plot. But watch the trailer. It's kind of a cool concept. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, time travel's involved. It's part of the plot device. Mm-hmm. With time travel, I always have one question, first and foremost, Every story sets up its own time travel rules. Does curvature, and if so, does it follow those rules? Whatever they are, don't say what they are because I don't want to spoil anything, but...
I don't know if it does follow the time travel rules.
I don't know if it really establishes any rules.
Does it kind of goes rogue?
Well...
It really does go rogue. It tells its own story without paying attention to what people really go for on time travel rules.
I mean, in terms of its own film. Each film has their own rules. Does it follow its own rules?
Well,
because sometimes people get lost in that, where they...
I would say it does. It doesn't ever outwardly establish what those rules are going to be, but it has a very specific intention. Once it completes its cycle, then things kind of rework the way that they're supposed to for this timeline.
I think it cheats.
You think it cheats? How does it cheat?
It cheats. It cheats because the person that gets sent back in time has an amnesia to a degree.
This is fascinating. Okay, so that was just something I like to ask.
Well, very interesting to think about this concept.
I don't want to say anything more, but I just wanted to get people thinking, because whenever you have time travel, rules are very important to it. Some films just don't even tell you what they are. I mean, like Looper. Looper's all over the place. But it works. So
I would say this actually has a lot in common with Looper.
Okay. So as you're watching it, it feels like a thriller. Very clever concept. I know there's a lot more that I can't really say, because I said a lot more about the plot, and Amanda scolded me and said, I can't say that because it'll ruin the movie.
It was like the whole, it was almost a step by step.
Diego, I pulled it off IMDb, man. So you call them and get that changed. If anybody wants to know the full description, go to IMDb and scroll down. So what did you think? Did you like the concept? Was it a thriller for you? I mean, did it keep you engaged throughout?
So it had a very clean and smooth look to the way that it was appeared on screen. But it also at times felt like it was trying to be too artsy in some respects. And some of that was the look of it, but most of it was just the story, because I feel like there was some parts that tried to be a little bit more appearing as a twist, and it wasn't really a twist. It was a little bit, or maybe it was just too obvious for me. But I really did appreciate the concept, the idea of it, and I think it still worked out to be a pretty good movie. It was engaging for me. I was interested to see what was going to happen. There was one part that took me a little bit by surprise. I wasn't expecting one thing, but that was pretty early on. And then from there, it was a little predictable, but it was still interesting enough. They still built some tension.
Throughout.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very good at-home rental that you can watch with like your family or your friends or something like that, I think.
John, how about you?
It does a really good job of setting you up and then backtracking on itself, changing your expectations of what the story is supposed to be about. You get set up for one thing and it backtracks, and then it starts setting up another thing, and then it backtracks, and then it really shows you the story starts to unfold in a way that does make sense, and it has a reasonable payoff to it. It's enjoyable. I think that Lindsay Fonseca, who people may recognize her as being the daughter from How I Met Your Mother, she had a recurring role that she only had to tape once in her life for How I Met Your Mother on there, and then she was on Agent Carter. She was really fun to watch, and Linda Hamilton was just a pleasure seeing her on screen again. Glenn Morshower, I always think of him as Aaron from 24, and I love watching what he does. So the cast was great. The writing was strong, and the story kind of backtracks on itself enough to keep you engaged and interested. The payoff at the end is cool, but it's not something that gets you pumping your fists or anything else like that. But overall, I liked it.
But it did stick the landing.
It did stick the landing.
The beginning started off really strong for me, where it really did a great job of breaking into the second act. But in the third part of it, you know, the last portion of the movie, when we're getting into the climax and everything, it feels like it didn't have as much of a bang as the beginning part did. And for me, that was a struggle, because I already saw how the ending was going to play out, and I would have appreciated more of the twist you get in the beginning being the twist you get at the end instead.
I
think that would have made the story a lot stronger if we would have seen that at the end, because in the beginning we already get something that really throws you off kilter, and you're like, okay. Right. I mean, you would have really had to mess with the story at that point to really understand to get to that final point. But I think that would have paid off a lot better.
Okay. The major plot device to the story really kind of works against itself, unfortunately, is what I think she's getting at. Once it starts robbing you of some of the tension right away. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So as soon as you figure out what that major plot device is, you start like, okay, well, something has to work here. I already know what A is, and I know what C is. Mm-hmm. Then B is the logical progression. So that's what I think she's trying to get at, is that the plot device itself robs itself, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Curvature?
I'd give it $6.
Yeah, $6 sounds right to me.
All right. And the other one we saw, well, actually, just Amanda saw, it was mid-90s. We'll just touch on this briefly. It's a small indie flick written and directed by Jonah Hill. Mid-90s follows Stevie, a 13-year-old in 1990s era L.A. He's struggling with his family, including his codependent single mom, his abusive older brother, and at school, where his richer friends seem to overlook him. When Stevie befriends a crew of skateboarders, he learns some tough lessons about class, life, and privilege. It seems like a coming-of-age story.
It is, but it's kind of not.
Well, here's what I want to know. From the trailers, the film style almost looked as though it was shot on an iPhone, almost documentary style. Does that work as a whole?
For me, it reminded me more of watching a movie on full screen like you used to watch, you know, back before we kind of switched everything to widescreen. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So for me, I thought that was just a device to be used in the, you know, to really get that atmosphere across, because the whole movie, it's not overwhelming nostalgia. A lot of it you can see in like backdrops, but the feel of the movie is very 90s. The way it's presented to you, the way that the characters talk, the way that, there was so much, I really felt like I was just transported back into the 90s. So for me, that piece of it worked really well, because I felt like I was watching a movie from the 90s again, and I was like, gosh, I really appreciate widescreen right now.
So did you enjoy the film overall? I mean, this is Jonah Hill's first film. Based on what you saw here, do you want to see more?
He did a really good job with what he was trying to do. I think he should have had
What was he trying to do, in your opinion?
It was just a story about trying to help people understand. I wouldn't even say help people understand. It was just a way for you to connect with growing up, to take you back to your childhood and not necessarily revisit the pains of it, but just the friendships that you've had, the bonds and the things that break them, but also how one seemingly minuscule hobby can take you away from all of the trauma in your life and make things just a little bit better for you. So for us on this podcast, movies seems to be that for art. John would use art for his, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's a way to take you out of all the bad stuff going on and put you into a happy place, and using that escape. And through that escape, you can build friendships. Even if you and those people that you've built friendships with have nothing more in common, if you're very different people, that was the 90s. You could connect to people that you really didn't agree with at all on a lot of things if you connected over one thing. And so that was really brought to life, and it reminded me of my childhood. It reminded me of me growing up, the troubles that you have to go through and things
that you have to. So it was very nostalgic for you?
Yeah. And I think it did a really good job of teaching you that sometimes you just, even if something goes awry in your friendship, those bonds are always going to be there for you in that childhood. And it's, even if it's a struggle, man, you just got to get through it.
So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give mid-90s?
$6.50. Oh, all right. I was leaning towards $7.
But didn't get there.
The ending was a little different.
I heard a lot of complaints about the ending.
I don't know. That's something I've sat on. I really like that it was unique, but am I expecting it? Did it disappoint me because I was expecting it to follow the normal suit of screenwriting?
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody go check it out and let us know if you agree with the ending critique. All right, John, let's go to new releases. What do we got coming out?
All right, coming up first, we have on 11-2, we have a Bohemian Rhapsody, a chronicle of the years leading up to Queen's legendary appearance at Live Aid 1985 concert. This is by director Nope, starring Rami Malek, Lucy Boynton, Ben Hardy, Joseph Manzello, and Mike Myers.
Well, then nobody knows who Nope is, sucka.
Oh, I'm
Brian
sorry.
Brian Singer.
It's I call him Director Nope.
Okay. All right. Not a fan. So, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, multiple reasons. Then we have Nobody's Fool, A woman released from prison reunites with her sister. She soon discovers that her sister is in an online relationship with a man who is not what he appears to be. This is directed and written by Tyler Perry. The stars Tiffany Haddish, Courtney Hengler, Missy Pyle, and Whoopi Goldberg. Then we have The Nutcracker in the Four Realms. A young girl is transported into a magical world of gingerbread soldiers and an army of mice. This stars Mackenzie Foy, Tom Sweet, Mira Sile, and Ella Bomber. Then we have The Reckoning, Hollywood's worst kept secret. A powerful, personal, uncensored documentary about the worst kept secret in Hollywood, which is the sexual misconduct that's going on currently. Then finally, we have Destination Wedding on 11/6. The story of two miserable, unpleasant wedding guests, Lindsay and Frank, who develop a mutual affection despite themselves. This is written and directed by Victor Levin, stars Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. One of the things that I think is hysterical about that is that they're literally the only two people that have a name in this movie. Everybody else is named Bride, Groom, Frank's stepfather, Frank's mother, Frank's...
That's funny.
I think that's hysterical. So those are the movies coming up this week and looks like into next week. Aaron, what are you going to go see?
Well, I want to point out Thunder Road, which is a movie I reviewed a couple weeks back. Several weeks back. Because I forgot we had a Halloween special. We had the 1988 special. And before we had a regular episode. So it's been like 3 weeks since we had a normal episode. That movie is out now on video on demand. So I definitely will take that over any of them. That includes Bohemian Rhapsody. Great movie. Watch it. Thunder Road. Also, you can hear the interview with the director, but even if you don't want to listen to that, just see the movie. It's really, really well done. Of these, of the crap you rambled off, and Suspiria, I think, goes nationwide too. I probably will definitely check that out, even though it's a remake of an Argento movie, which is really hard to replicate. But I'm going to go Bohemian Rhapsody. But I'm more excited about Nobody's Fool. I don't know if I should be ashamed of that because I feel like the internet's telling me I got to go for this is where I'm into it because I'm more into Nobody's Fool because I like Tiffany Haddish and I'm a fan of Tyler Perry. I ain't ashamed. But Bohemian Rhapsody is the one that, you know, that's the hashtag. That's what's blown up. Trailer's great. Everybody other than Nope is great.
Yeah.
But I'll probably see Nobody's Fool first, but I will see Bohemian Rhapsody.
Nobody's Fool wins for me, but Keanu Reeves in Destination Wedding, that pulls me.
Really?
It's Keanu Reeves. I'm for sure going to watch that.
Have you seen some of his stuff that isn't called John Wick?
I don't even care. I watch him. I do love Keanu Reeves a lot. But I would say Bohemian Rhapsody was top notch for me until I realized it was Bryan Singer that was doing the directing for it.
And he's really killing it that much for you guys, huh?
I just don't. I know that's my decision, and I'm probably going to irritate some people by saying this, but I just don't really feel like I want my money to go to supporting him. But I also struggle because there's so many other people I do want to support.
It makes you feel better. He left when the movie was like 70% done. Another director came in and finished it.
And he's on the credits, isn't he?
No.
I thought Bryan Singer was off the credits.
Bryan Singer gets full credit because he completed more than 70% of the film.
Oh, really?
Right. No.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I freaking love Queen. It's gonna be really hard for me to not see it. Like, more than likely I'm going to see it, but I'm gonna feel really guilty about it.
Can I ask you guys a legit question about this movie?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here are what a lot of the reviews have said so far. Okay, Rami Malek is fantastic, nails Freddie
like
Mercury,
phenomenal, like Oscar, phenomenal. Yeah.
I think everybody should, if anything, if you go to see it, support that performance if you'd like to. There's a lot of people that work on a movie, not just one person. Mm-hmm. That said, the one critique I've seen over and over is that this movie, Bohemian Rhapsody, is much more sugar-coated. Like, it's much more following the band as a fan as opposed to digging into the real nitty-gritty Freddie Mercury dirt, which I know some people wanted. Now, me, I don't see a problem with that. I think there's room in the world for both kinds of biopics or biopics, whichever way you'd like to look at it. Sometimes as a fan, I think it's okay to go see a movie where it just, you know, just keeps you, your fist pumping, keeps you excited, keeps you going and says, hey, you're a fan of Queen. Here's the Queen. Here's a safe Queen story. And then if people want the down and dirty Freddie Mercury story, they can tell that another time. I don't know why it's a problem, but how do you guys feel about it? Do you prefer your biopics to really get in there and get dirty? John, what about you? Do you like it dirty?
Do you like it down and dirty?
Well, I mean, yeah. But the awkward real answer is, I just
awkward.
Want
just very uncomfortable.
Yeah. But the real answer is I just want to tell the story right. That's all. That's all I care. Tell me an entertaining and fun story that if it pushes me to decide to start looking into the darker stuff on my own, then that's great. I have a research project given to me. But if it doesn't give me the want to do that, then I mean I really don't care. This goes back to our conversation about do we really need to know that much about our heroes?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm totally in for this to just basically be like a Queen sing-along. I'm perfectly content with that happening. But I also am not opposed to the opposite, where we get to know the nitty-gritty details of those sorts of...
So either way, you're good with
it. Yeah, I don't have that complaint. I don't share that complaint with others, even though I haven't seen it. The content of it does not bother me. That's what I kind of expected going into it with the trailer I was given. My only hesitation is just the director thing. And that's, I don't know. It's a very complex situation.
You ain't got time for complexity. So, John, what about you? What are you picking? Because you're not seeing the Nope movie. So what's the other one?
I'm not seeing the Nope movie unless somebody tells me otherwise or it comes out on VOD really fast. I'm not seeing the Nope movie anytime soon. Destination Wedding. I'll go see Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder like flirt it up on screen. Why not?
You don't have to go anywhere, John. It's on video on demand. You literally sit on your couch where you love to be.
Well, perfect. Then I'm definitely going to see that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go into our From the Outside In topic, which is when TV shows go on too long. NCIS, CSI, Walking Dead, Supernatural. Some TV shows just seem to go on forever. They just keep going and going and going. They're still going. They talk about going longer. I hear Walking Dead's going to go for 20 years. In fact, Walking Dead has had this come up as a talking point for at least the last 2 years. We're constantly talking about it on the internet, on the show, we've mentioned it a couple times. Lately, the ratings have been plummeting on that show, and AMC still shows no signs of letting it go. So the question is, when is it too long? As fans, we often fall in love with shows. We all agree on that, right? We love our TV, and we watch a hell of our TV. And then we keep chugging along with them, even after we've stopped enjoying them. Maybe we still like certain factors, but we don't love them anymore. And we just, you know, there seems to be that moment in a long-running show where you're like, I'm kind of done, but I can't leave you. You know, it's like a bad relationship. Ratings drop. They keep going. How do you feel when a show you love just won't stop?
We don't want to stop watching and then miss out on something, at least for me. I'm afraid it's that feeling of what if. What if I stop watching and something really cool ends up happening? Or what if I stop watching and they end up, there's a huge plot twist that I think would have been done a lot better that I am now going to miss. So there's a lot of different things that go through my head of, if I have invested all of this time so far, why quit now? And what if I do? What will I miss? Maybe nothing.
It's
maybe
like
I'll
miss
nothing.
It's a completionist thing, right?
Sort of. I don't need to know the ending necessarily. Like Grey's Anatomy is a perfect example. I don't.
Or The Simpsons. How long was it? Like 30 years now that thing's been on?
A very long time.
Long time.
Yeah.
But Grey's Anatomy. Why Grey's Anatomy?
Well, I love that. I mean, I think that they do a great job of reinventing themselves, but it's just really hard to give up on a show that you've spent 16 seasons with, and then just all of a sudden you're like, oh no, sorry, I'm just going to drop you. Because I still am generally, even if I'm uninterested in a show where I'm not constantly engaged like I used to be, I still care about it and I still care about those characters. So it's hard for me to just say, okay, that's fine. I'm done. Like I've already gotten to this point. At this moment in my life, now I'm just sacrificing 60 minutes of my time. It's worth it, Shonda.
I think it happens to me more than I'd like to admit. It's really happening to me. You know what? I think it started when every channel or streaming service had 47 new shows. Mm-hmm. It really started impacting me that I can leave you. I can quit you. I just became a whore, a TV whore. I no longer feel the need to commit.
I'm loyal.
I can just, you know, I'm loyal to a degree, but at some point you're abusing me. And I'm not going to take it anymore, Ike. You're not going to keep hitting me. I'm going to go and I'm going to.
No, gonna we ain't going to take it.
Are you really singing like
I'm
Twisted
giving you
Sister
background
right now?
Music.
Anymore. We're now going to. That's how you sing it. You don't sing it all bubbly.
I can't sing it like that. We're not gonna take it.
Jenna,
that's
you know
what it sounds like.
I know. That's
do you
why
notice
I didn't
this
do
trend?
It.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's been going on for a while, but I'm getting a lot easier about leaving.
Oh, there's one show, and we'll talk. I'll talk about it later. But there's one show that taught me that it's perfectly okay for me to stop. There has been a couple of shows. I think right now I can only think of one show that I would have almost left, but I'm really glad I haven't because, yeah, there's such thing as a show that's been around for too long, but then it reinvents itself or it finds a way to keep it recreate itself or to keep me re-engaged or to change something that just like they found that spark that they had at the beginning and they all of a sudden have it again. So, yeah. It's possible for a show to be too long and then come right back around again. But then the shows that just keep on hanging around and there's like beep, beep, beep. Yeah, that when as soon as I hear the first couple seconds of that flat line, I'm out. I can't do it anymore. There's too many options. I don't have enough time. I could die tomorrow. I got stuff to watch.
It seems like TV, you know, for all the talk about ratings determine when a show gets canceled and everything else, I see shows that don't seem to be getting any ratings. They're still on forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I appreciate fans of Supernatural. John, I know you're a big fan of Supernatural and all that jazz.
I am.
And then shows like Arrow and all those that are on there. But they've been on for so long and they only get like three people that watch them. I mean, the three people that listen to this podcast, that's cool. But it's just three people. It's not, you would think for a television show, they need a bigger audience than that. But if you go look at the actual ratings, those shows don't get, that's probably a perfect example of social media helping the shows because I think word of mouth helps those more than the actual ratings do. It's only like 2 or 3 million people that watch every week, maybe four.
How do we go from three to 2 or 3 million?
Well, that's what he means. So he's using the magic numerical thing where he's like 3.3 people say watch it. That's what he's trying to say is it's like 3.3 million.
No, I gotcha.
Yeah, 3.3 million. That same number that listened to our podcast.
Way to try to dig yourself out of that grave. And John, you're such an excellent side man for helping.
Right. And Stephen Amell gets paid so much money to do Arrow for so few people watching it. If you're right about the numbers on that, I don't know. I didn't check, but I did hear just recently that he's being paid something like $350,000 per episode.
Oh, man. TV stars get paid an exorbitant amount of money for, you know, I read something that's really weird. Jensen Ackles makes like 50 grand more an episode than your other guy in Supernatural.
Probably because you can remember Padalecki. His name.
Yeah, Jared Padalecki. But no, but they're brothers on the show. They're equal partners. So that
they're both like the A person on the call list. That's A1 and A2.
Yeah, which makes no sense, right? The Jensen, I mean, I get it. He was more of a name before the show started, but now they're kind of equal. So you'd think they get paid equal.
I would say Padalecki is a little bit higher above him now.
No, they're still about equal.
With his esteem, because he has he has a huge following from Supernatural.
I think so you're mixing Jensen up. Eccles. It's Jensen Ackles that has the bigger following because everyone adores Dean. Everyone loves
Dean's
Dean.
Dean's the cool one. Dean's the cool
Sam, on the other hand, everyone just kind of loves. I mean, he's just kind of like, but everyone adores Dean. I would throw in for Dean, so...
What does that mean?
I'll he pay cash you, money?
Oh!
Like, I don't know.
No, I think it means he would have sex with Jensen Ackles.
I'm thinking so, yeah. But I'm going to move along from that.
Nah, you know what? I'd like more of a visual. Go ahead, fill me in. Would there be flowers?
With Dean? Yeah, there would
be
flowers.
Got him flustered. Look at that. That's adorable.
He's like thinking about it.
What? Yes.
I mean, I may have to dress up like Scooby-Doo, but it'll be all right. I can make it work.
Okay, so
that was a good Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, he's obviously practiced in the bedroom. What's the moment for you when you realize the show's going on too long? What's that moment?
You're chugging away, you're watching the show, then you start realizing that, okay, well, that person right here, they're introduced at this exact minute of the show. That means they're the bad guy, and oh my God, I fell asleep.
That's a good moment.
It's definitely a good sign. If I have to ask myself this question, we're far past the point of me realizing. But if I get so bored that it's become background noise for me to scroll around on my phone or do something else, or I've even gotten to the point for some shows, it's background music, background noise for me to do my work, like for my job.
Oh.
Like I'll check my emails. That's a problem. That's really a problem.
I would argue today, doesn't everybody check their phone during their TV shows? If you're checking your phone constantly, should you even be watching it at that point?
Yeah, you shouldn't be watching it at that point.
Depends on the show.
I think that's the point. I make a concerted effort to leave my phone someplace else when I'm watching TV, so I don't watch the, so I don't pay attention to it. I found myself not enjoying TV as much because I would be on my phone all the time. And so that's when I started like leaving it in the kitchen or in the bedroom while I was watching TV so that I can focus on what's in front of me. And I realized that I started enjoying TV better that way.
Well, because a lot of people say that, you know, I can manage different things. I'm a multitasker. Go look at science. Science proves you cannot do more than 100% of things with your brain. So if you're devoting 20% of your attention to your phone, you're only devoting 80% of your attention to the television. That's just a matter of science.
Some shows you don't even need 80% to follow along.
Might be true, but there's always little things. And I think if you're playing with your phone more than 36%, that's my number. More than 36%, stop watching that show. You don't care about it.
That's fair.
Right.
When I start watching a show, and I realize that it's become like this bad relationship, that's when I know it's probably trying. You know, like, this woman's crazy. She's totally going to cut me in my sleep. And
Walking Dead.
Yeah. But I feel obligated to take her out for bagels anyway because, you know, we've been dating for so long. And I feel like I just got to keep. So you keep taking her crazy ass to Panera every single week. Every week you're taking her to Panera every single week.
Find a new place.
But deep in your heart.
This episode paid by Panera.
You deep in your heart, you want donuts. You want something else. You want donuts, but you can't let the bagels go because you just feel, I've done it for so long. It's such a deep-seated routine. Once you make that realization, you know what? I would much rather have a donut. That's when I quit.
I mean, don't you always want a donut over a bagel?
My analogies are on point this week. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, I'm actually, after my last week, I had to cut my diet back down, and all of a sudden, all I want to do is eat. Thanks, Aaron.
What about the OCD factor? You know, I have a lot of friends that I've talked to about this particular topic, and several of them, when I ask them why they're still watching the show, and Walking Dead does come up, and I know that's the popular one. That and Big Bang Theory seem to be the popular ones. You know, why am I still watching that show? It's been on forever. I should have just quit it. They're still watching it. It's the completionist in them. It's the OCD nature. Try to say that three times real fast. It's the OCD nature of I have to see how it ends. Is that a factor for any of you?
If I've invested countless hours, it's going to take a lot for me to not want to finish it. I don't know that it's necessarily anything OCD per se. It's just kind of like, well, I got this far, so why give up now? You know, if I've already gotten to
that. At what point do you
stuff.
Quit, though? I mean, if you
I
got-
don't. That's the problem. That's why I'm still on season 16 of Grey's Anatomy, and I'm not going to give it up if they keep making it. And I don't watch all of Shonda's new shows, but for me to give up Grey's Anatomy, even if I'm not completely invested, it's going to take a lot. Like, probably won't happen.
It used to be a thing for me. I used to have to watch shows until the bitter, 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 disgusting end. When it ended, I actually said, oh, thank God, I can move on now. I used to do that because I thought everything had to come in a collection. You had to have everything lined up in a row and it all had to look nice, even your knowledge of shows. I have learned over the years that, again, my time is way too precious and I don't have enough of it. And if I'm not really invested in something anymore, or something does not make me happy or entertain me or teach me or any of those things, then I need to walk away. And it's okay. It's perfectly fine. No one needs to call each other. We don't need to exchange addresses. It's just time to walk away, and it's perfectly okay.
Yeah, I've gotten to that point too. The OCD thing used to be my thing where I have to stick it out. It's been, man, and I am just like a abused relationship person. I just keep going back, man. I really do. Walking Dead is a
perfect
example.
Riverdale.
No, Riverdale never had me hit in its hooks though. I mean, I like the show. I like the first season, but not seven seasons. I didn't have that kind of investment. I never invested that kind of time in it. So I'm not really out anything. Plus I had closure the first season. You give me closure. There's a point where I can just walk away clean. That happened with 13 Reasons Why. That happened with Heroes. I mean, there's just shows where, okay, you know, I'm done. You know, I don't need to keep going. Whereas shows like Walking Dead and Big Bang Theory and a couple I'll mention in a minute, they've gone after I stopped really enjoying them to the level that I originally once did. And every season I keep hoping they're going to recapture something. They're going to go a little further. They're going to do a little something else. I keep falling for the promotions. I watch one or two episodes and bang, I'm in it for the season.
Pun intended.
But most of them I do not. What was the pun?
Big Bang Theory. And bang, I'm invested. Okay, yeah, that was bad.
The pun was definitely not intended because I didn't know it was there. But we'll let it go. Mostly, I don't do that anymore. In fact, I'm getting very, very good about once I get to the end of the season, I kind of reevaluate if I want to come back to it. There's shows where
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
I have a question. The reason why is that I was just thinking about this because last year I got all hooked into finally finishing all of Smallville. And here I am saying that I learned to drop things and I learned to leave it a go. But Smallville, it's available to me on instant streaming and I can watch it all I want. And I don't have to put that much effort into getting it because it's right there in front of me. So yeah, I ended up watching that from the beginning to the end and hating myself a little bit more each day because of it. Do you think streaming is something that makes it all too easy to do that?
Oh yeah, by far. Especially when you take commercials out of the mix. I'll tell you what, you give me a show, you know, Walking Dead is an exception because I can watch it live. You know, a lot of the shows I watch on Netflix and streaming and whatever other avenues I have where I don't have to watch commercials. You put commercials back into it, you make me have to watch them on the DVR. I'm quitting you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mid-season. Oh,
yeah. I would quit almost every show I'm watching if I had to sit through. There's times where I will want to watch I have two Hulu accounts. I have one that's mine and one that's not mine. The one that is mine, I get with my Spotify subscription.
Are you
for free.
Peddling Hulu stuff?
No. Listen,
you're on the street like, hey, come here, kid. $3, I'll get you a season Lethal Weapon. Come on.
So I have
you want rigs or no rigs? What do you want?
So I have mine, which is limited ads, which means I still have them. And then I have the subscription that isn't mine that I use regularly, which has no ads. And the amount of times I've accidentally opened under my own name profile where I'm like, I'm not finishing this show if I have to sit here. If I forget the password for the person whose account I'm using, I'm not watching that show. I'm done. Not happening. And that goes for, I cannot think of more than maybe two shows that I would actually watch with commercials. I did it with Grey's Anatomy for their premiere, and I was like, this is 2 hours.
We are snobs these days, aren't we? We're like, whoa. Oh, yeah. I was actually watching, I think it, because our DVR is like so clunky. You fast forward, and if you fast forward for too long, it'll actually zip right into the next commercial break. It's the weirdest thing. It's really annoying, but whatever. So sometimes we'll watch Walking Dead and watch it live, and I've actually sat through the commercial. It is – I would rather be tortured in Game of Thrones sometimes than have to deal with commercial breaks anymore. I am so pampered and spoiled, and I would quit a show like in a heartbeat. If it was an every week thing and I couldn't get around it, bye.
Well, here's another point too. So we brought up the cell phones taking you out of that moment for the TV shows.
As long as it's under 36%.
Right. So for me, well, with commercials, there's definitely more than 36%.
I don't count commercials. Be on your phone entire commercial break.
Listen,
that doesn't count.
My point. When I watch
I'm
a commercial.
You're scolded right now.
You are.
Don't you have dishes to do?
No. Go make me a sandwich.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
Spicy.
When I go through the commercials and I'm actually watching something with commercials, not only is it a very traumatic event for me, but I go to my phone. I go to my phone because what else am I going to do? If I'm just sitting here waiting for the commercial to end, I don't want to watch the commercial. I'm not interested in this commercial. I'm irritated that I have to watch you. So I'll get on my phone. But then the TV show will come back on, and now I'm like, well, I was invested in something on my phone, so I have this hard time of going back and forth every 8 minutes between commercials and this show and my phone, and now I'm like, well, if I was starting to maybe have a conversation with somebody about a movie or something, now I'm invested in that conversation and I don't want to drop it to get back to my TV show. Commercials take me out of the show because I get so distracted by all of the other things I could do during the commercial break that I'm like, at this point, why even finish the episode?
Man,
why do it?
Netflix has ruined television.
Oh, man, it's made it so wonderful.
It really all the best is. Ways. Now, that to me, Amanda, is a way that you need to teach yourself when is the time to invest yourself in a conversation and when not. That's what you described to me more. It's like you were like, okay, well, I'm on my phone now, and now I'm in a serious conversation about life and death with somebody on the internet. who I actually don't even see in person, and now I'm just stuck here. You got to really just cut that out. The other side of the conversation, I was just recently on a business trip. Whenever I go on a business trip and the hotel room that they put me in does not have a TV that's Netflix compatible, I am on my tablet. I don't even turn that TV on. I put my tablet on and I watch something there. Mm-hmm. Because I will not deal with commercials. It just, I've tried. I've put TV on, had commercials, and they just make me sad in a way that it's more noticeable now than ever that the commercials treat people like morons, and I just don't want anything to do with it.
You know what? I think we're finally at the point as a society, all of us listening, where if somebody gives you the option, you know, puts you in a booth and says, all right, here's the deal. You either can live out your life in the United States as comfortable as you ever have been, but you have to have commercials the rest of your life. Or you go to a third world country where a disease may ravage you, but you get unlimited Netflix and streaming access. No commercials.
I'll stay inside.
I think people would take the streaming option. I think that really would be the option. People would just go, Netflix, yeah. I mean, I don't have to go outside too much.
The disease doesn't get you if you don't leave the house.
That's a good plan. Yeah. Still get air conditioning? Okay. We're okay. We're good.
Air conditioning and duct tape to make sure the whole house is sealed up. I'm in.
we're a sad, sad lot. All right. So what's your favorite go-to example of a show that you love now that you had to like it? You had to be a fan of it and it went on too long. It can't be one of those where I never watched it. Yeah. You had to be a fan.
Wait, I feel pretty assaulted by that voice you're just doing.
It's a thing, right? I mean, there's the people on the internet, you know, the ones who hop in a thread talking about super popular shows like Walking Dead or Big Bang Theory.
And tell you how terrible it is, even though they've never watched
an episode of it. Yeah, or they were never really a fan. And they're like, man, isn't that show over yet? Isn't that show done? Why is that show still on? It should have ended it like in year two. Shut up.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about your opinion if you weren't a fan of it. You're just kind of being an asshole. Stop it. Love better. Go back to watching Arrow. It's getting better next year, I promise.
Well, as I've already brought it up quite a few times, Grey's Anatomy is my go-to. I stick around because it does have a
So you're acknowledging it has gone on too long.
It's totally gone on too long, but I'm not going to quit it. I'm not going to break up with it. So they got rid of almost all of my favorite characters. And I'm still watching it. That's how bad the addiction is.
That's like crack.
It is. They reinvent the wheel, so I do give them props for that. But the last couple years, they've been trying to rekindle old storylines. And that's when I know they're losing creativity. So they introduced a character who was already in the show and done with the show. And now she's back. And now she's a big part of the storyline just to kind of get something drumming up to create drama. I don't need that. I didn't like her to begin with. Why are we bringing her back?
With that show, aren't you concerned about the patients of that hospital? With everybody humping and everything else that's going on there, shouldn't they care about the patients
they
more?
They do.
I don't want my nurses having all that personal conflict outside my room. You know what? Just heal me. That's all I need is you to make me feel better so I can leave. You're making me sad and I'm hurt. As it is.
You obviously haven't watched the show. One thing that they...
I sure haven't. I watched the first season. I'm one of those guys right now. I'm like, it shows that ended years ago. I don't watch it.
Yeah. Well, they used to do a really great job of connecting their characters, their main like doctors and nurses, to the patients who are in the hospital. And so they would do something... That story would be about those patients, but then you would just have like a B storyline that's for the doctors. And that would kind of run rampant through. So you would get to go back and forth between the scenarios. Mm. And now it's a little bit more about how are we going to create tension and drama between the doctors? And we're not really getting the whole scenario of what's actually happening to the patient. And that was one of the most beautiful things that Shonda has ever done, was create a platform where nurses and doctors are so respected and loved by their patients because they're doing so much to help them. And those storylines that made me cry or made me laugh or anything like that, I don't have that anymore. I'm not laughing or crying. And it's bad if you can't make me cry. That's a problem if you can't make me cry.
All right, John. Top Grey's Anatomy.
I'm going to get a chair thrown at me, but okay. Castle.
Wait, it did go on too long. No, you're right. Yeah. But not because of Nathan Fillion.
No, and the truth is like I still like that cast. I liked everything about that cast, mm-hmm. but the show became like after a while. So when the stories became so predictable that I would be like, okay, well there's a bad guy. Okay, now it's this. Now here's a red herring. And it got to the point where after a while the characters were just enough to keep me engaged. I liked Nathan Fillion being charming on screen. Stanek Haddick was kind of nice to watch too. She was funny and sweet and all those other things. The two dippy sidekick cops, they were interesting to watch. Everything about the show worked with the exception of keeping me engaged, and I would keep on following. Especially when they consummated the relationship, I would start falling asleep every other episode, and that's when I decided that I needed to just stop because I was getting nothing out of it anymore. So yeah, Castle.
They ruined the dynamic when they solidified their relationship and made the episodes about their relationship as a couple. Yeah. They could never do things independently anymore. It felt like they were a unity now, which I mean, sure. Yeah. Relationships, you should probably be like, you're an entity together, but you're still separate human beings. You should still have your own problems and quarrels and things to deal with independently mm-hmm. from that person. But we didn't get that anymore. We only got to see their relationship together, and that really took me out of the show. So I 100% agree with you, John.
I stopped watching it after they started making it all about them. Oh, making man, love, making it was, sweet love.
Yeah, it was just not fun anymore. No, that's not what. Nope. That's not what got me interested.
Plus, they hate each other behind the scenes. So that's right.
I never even heard that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you can kind of tell when you go back and watch like the later seasons where you don't see them in the same shot several times. It's weird. Kind of like that whole Vin Diesel, The Rock thing. You just picture Nathan Fillion and Stanek Haddick going there. No, I'm not going to be anything with you. I will act to a mannequin. Bye. Mine's pretty easy. It's The X-Files. It's just a show that, you know, they should have saw it got too steeped in the mythology. It got too wrapped up in its own head. Chris Carter, I blame for that one, the creator. He just did not know when to call it a day. Now, I do think they've rebounded because here's the thing. The show was about Fox Mulder. Mm-hmm. Always was. Now, Dana Scully and his relationship became paramount to the show's success. But it stemmed from Fox Mulder investigating his sister's disappearance. And it got so far away from that, especially when David Duchovny decided he needed to leave the show. That's the point when they should have wrapped mm-hmm. it up. They should have just said, okay, let's set an end game. Let's wrap the show up. Instead, they went on two more years without even having Fox Mulder involved in the show. And it just didn't work. You know, Annabeth Gish is Annabeth or Annabelle? One of those, Gish. She was in the house, the Haunting of Hill House. And then Robert Patrick, you know, they took over as FBI agents. They worked with Dana Scully. It just didn't work. It was, yeah. And they came back and the show worked a little bit. You know, I actually liked the resurgence of X-Files, but I would have been fine if they just would have ended it when Mulder left.
Annabeth.
So, Annabeth. Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So X-Files, that's my go-to.
That's a good pick. It's a surprising pick, but it's a good pick.
It made me sad. When Fox Mulder left, it was one of the saddest days of my TV love life.
The Fox Mulder leaving changed the dynamic of that show, and it just didn't have the same punch it used to.
Well, I want to say Desperate Housewives. This is for my wife, Desperate Housewives, because she loved that show, and it went off the rails in season 5. So there you go. Okay, now our listeners, we always put the topic in our Facebook group, so our listeners had some suggestions, so we each picked a few of those. Actually, a ton of suggestions, so Amanda, what were your listener comments?
So we had Maurice Kehano. I don't know how to say that.
Is it with a Q?
Yeah.
Maurice Q. Welcome.
Sure. But I'm pretty sure it's not a Q in Spanish.
Oh.
Okay. So I'm pretty sure it's Kehano or something like that. I'm sure John can say it better than I can. Anyway.
I don't know what you're talking
Kehano?
About.
Kehano?
I mean, you're Spanish.
Kehano.
So
it's Q U I J A N O. So we'll just spell it. He said, The Walking Dead.
Way even to not offend anyone.
I know, right? That's safe. I'm trying to avoid saying because I'm terrible. The Walking Dead, even the cast members think so, which I think is hysterical because, yeah, they agree.
Yeah.
Tara QT said Pretty Little Liars. What was with that last season and Spencer's awful British accent? And I could not concur more with this statement.
Isn't that the show where they solved the case or whatever and they kept going?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they, I don't remember, honestly, to be quite honest, how it all wrapped up. I don't think I've seen the last.
Going back to Walking Dead, we kind of touched on it. Are you guys on board with that? I mean, I know AMC has this 20-year plan, but when a show, well, Amanda, you can't speak to it because you don't watch it, really.
Regularly. Yeah. I delve into all the spoilers. That's all I do.
Yeah. John, I'm going to go to you this because she's going to be one of those people.
Right.
I'm allowed to make a statement.
You understand. You don't watch it.
I watch certain episodes. I just don't watch the whole season because I don't need to.
Well, that's probably not far from the truth. Do you understand where people are coming from on Walking Dead, or is it unfair?
I quit the show. So, yeah, I totally get it. All right. I watched that first episode with Negan and people getting brained, and I was like, I'm out. I washed my hands of the show. I have no interest in it. My wife started picking it back up again, so that she was like, out of nowhere, she was like, I want to see what happens. And I was like, that's fine. You can sit in here by yourself and watch it. And I did something else. I have no interest in that show. I don't need the abusive relationship anymore. I don't need the therapy bills. I don't need to sit there and sit in a room with the show and talk about our feelings and talk about where we went wrong. I just don't need it. I don't need it.
All right, Amanda, what was your other ones?
So Matthew Coy said Big Bang Theory and Grey's Anatomy.
Mm.
Now,
Big Bang Theory, it's on the final season, so.
Yeah, which is good. I will say I was never one of those fans of Big Bang Theory that was obsessed with the show. I thought it was clever. It usually made me laugh because it was always pretty funny. But then it got to a point where it was just redoing the same jokes and the same plot. For me, it felt like each episode was this, I've seen this before.
I did like it, too.
And then I was like, this is just the same thing over and over again.
I enjoyed the show until it got more about sex humor. It became like almost Two and a Half Men.
That's a good analogy. Humor
and body humor and stuff like that, where it got away from trying to do nerdy science humor and started just doing sex jokes and bathroom. I mean, it just didn't feel like the same show anymore for me.
That's an excellent, yeah. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Maybe. Just give me other ones, or is that it?
Those were the three. I only took three. All right, you guys John, took like eight.
No, we didn't. John, what do you got?
All right. So Philip Joy, Philip Cruz, and Jennifer Miller all say Dexter. And one of the reasons why I grabbed this and I lumped everyone together in one comment, but
that's fine.
Dexter was the show that taught me that I can break up with shows and it's okay.
I didn't break up with it, but man, after that last season, I sure wish I would have.
Totally not on board with any of you. I liked Dexter through the entire run.
Like, it's the last, episode?
Maybe? Even the hurricane. Love the hurricane.
It was ridiculous. It was absurd. There was zero reason for it to happen.
I disagree.
The way that they did it was not,
I'm in such a
minority. And it looked so, it was so poorly done. If they would have kept the story and at least made it look a little bit better, I could have maybe been a little bit okay with it. But it was just so far out of their abilities and their reach that it was, why are you trying to do something that you know that you cannot pull off visually? It looked atrocious. And then the story for me was just stupid.
All right, John, what else you got? I've been hammered by this Dexter thing for years. I mean, only person alive, I think, to like the final season.
Pretty sure. Michael C. Hall is probably going to tweet you and disagree.
No, he even said, damn, wasn't that good. I'm like, I liked it.
All right. So moving right along, Rita Aguilera and Tamela Plain both say Supernatural, which this is... I chose this comment or these two comments because though I agree up to an extent with Supernatural, I also feel like it really did turn things around. So yes, it could have ended and I would have been okay if it ended where I felt like it was getting a little bit too big for its britches, but I'm also really glad it turned itself around. So there's that. And then Tracy Cook Heinrichs says Scandal. That's another show I just quit. I got tired of the back and forth. I got tired of, okay, here's the same storyline over and over and over again for 15 different angles, and it just didn't work for me anymore. So yeah, I totally agree. Scandal's got to go.
I did quit that show.
Yep, so did I.
Impressive. I forgot about it.
I loved it. The first season I think is great.
So good.
And then it just went steamrolled. Johan Erickson and Nick Brown both say Prison Break. And as much as I love Prison Break, okay, and I love the entirety of the show, all, was it five seasons and the movie, TV movie? I own all of them. I completely agree. It should have stopped. Actually, I say the end of season two. Most people say season one, but I agree with season two. Yeah. The first two seasons were fantastic, weren't they?
Yeah, they were perfect. The first two seasons were two perfect seasons of television, and it could have ended right there. It got really convoluted after that, and then they started throwing in some super spy aspects, and that was just what was happening.
It became the Fast and the Furious first season. That was weird, but yeah.
Yeah, they went to Panama for the break some guy out of a Panamanian jail. It's really a lot easier than that. Just use money.
They never thought they should have just had an episode, the final episode. That's how they actually got him out. They just gave him like $500 and said, all right.
Right.
John Sanford
said. And it really would cost only that much, too. It really would only take $500 to get somebody out of jail.
Yeah, agreed. John Sanford said, Heroes, great show that should have stayed a single season like planned instead of messing it all up by dragging it one half-baked storyline after another. Yeah, and then they brought it back and did the same damn thing. Like, they didn't learn a single lesson. I don't get it.
Wah, wah, wah.
And Michael James Rook, final one. Make it up as you go shows like Lost and the Battlestar Galactica reboot. Good premise. padding. The audience gets bored. Lame, profound ending. I'm fine with playing it by ear when it doesn't matter. But these two pretended there was a mystery to unravel. Damn, James. Michael, I like how you think.
Rookie has some thoughts.
I appreciate it. Battlestar Galactica. You could have the first half of season four would have been a perfect ending. Instead, they drug it out, made it weird. Lost. I mean, I think my thoughts are well documented on that one. Season six. Blue.
So I have an honorable mention that I came up with as I was sitting here listening.
Of course
and
you did, Amanda. We wouldn't be the same show without that.
I honestly feel a little ashamed that I even am saying this, but Buffy went on a little too long for me.
Really? Yeah. Season five, when she died. Should have been the end.
No, I still like, but the last season where there's all of these vampire slayers and it just gets really convoluted and you could tell that he was trying to extend it. Now, I mean, I still liked it. It was okay, but I could tell that they were forcing it to stay out longer than it really needed to.
Did you like the season with the Spike getting all rapey?
Well, isn't that the last?
No, that's season six.
And that's the season before it ended. Actually, I have certain thoughts about Spike, and I know everybody loves him, and I loved him quite a bit. He was the one I thought Buffy should be with until then, but there are a lot of people who still think after that he was her number one.
Yeah, Angel, all the way. Angel, Team Angel.
He was emotionally abusive.
Team Angel.
But he didn't rape her, so there's that.
He was
or try.
He was fine as long as you didn't make him mad, as long as you kept him fed and happy.
And didn't sleep with him.
Yeah.
Which, don't make him too happy.
That's kind of like the worst girlfriend ever, now I think about it. Like, well, oh, we're just going to keep playing this game for life? Well, if I sleep with you, you will kill me. Yeah, but then we will have consummated our relationship. We will have taken the next step. If you love me, love me for who I am.
You know what I really loved about Angel is that how in his show he was finally able to like just start having sex with girls and he didn't murder people after.
It wasn't perfect happiness, that's why.
Right, but I think there's like a throwaway line where somebody said, "You think you're going to have perfect happiness in a relationship? What are you, nuts? There's no such thing as perfect happiness in a relationship."
True story.
He could only find perfect happiness with Buffy.
With Buffy, because he was the right one. All right, we're going way off on this, Buffy. All right, thanks everybody for their comments. That's great. I hope you enjoyed the topic. It's always fun when we get into a TV topic. We'll try to come back to one pretty soon. Recent film or TV recommendations real quick. Anything that you guys saw that you want to mention that you saw?
Well, we talked a little bit about The Haunting of Hill House, but I think it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I just finished it. I'm excited about it. I've also been watching The Rookie, which is... it's okay. It's not bad. If it didn't have Nathan Fillion, it wouldn't be good. But he legitimately changes the entire show and makes it a lot better. They rely on him quite a bit.
There's no bias at all in that statement.
There's definitely bias.
It doesn't sound like it.
The show is legitimately built around him. Like all of their writing relies on him.
Has he lost that freshman 20 that he put on at Castle?
I think he has.
Okay. I
would have banged him when he had his 20 on. All
right. John,
I'll make you a sandwich too, honey.
John, what do you, Jesus, what do you got? Anything?
I watched Sabrina this weekend. I'm not really sure how I feel about it. Like, it was fine. It was probably the most finest piece of TV on TV this weekend. I don't know why everyone's trying to compare it to Buffy or anything else like it, because it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work the same way. It doesn't survive the Bechdel test in any way, shape, or form. And, like, there's only one redeemable character in there as far as who's fun to watch, and it's the woman playing Hildy, and she was Etta Candy in Wonder Woman. She is fantastic. So anytime she was on screen, I was really enjoying what I was seeing. Would I suggest the show? Probably. I think part of my issues with it is that there was just way too much Hail Satan going on in it for me to be really enjoying it completely.
Yeah, so. I gotcha. Well, I know a lot of people are checking that one out, so I'll probably check out Sabrina on Netflix, right? That's what you're talking about?
Chilling Adventures.
Yeah, Sabrina on Netflix.
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. What a weird title.
Well, what if the regular Sabrina Teenage Witch is on there? You don't want to confuse people.
I also watched a movie on Netflix this weekend called Been So Long. There should be a review coming out at some point in time this week. But a great and wonderful movie done in England, apparently. The cast is great. It's a musical, so the songs are fantastic. The way they did the art direction was amazing. There's lights and colors, and the use of things is just fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I had so much fun with it. So if there's anything I watched this weekend I really enjoyed, that was Been So Long on Netflix.
All right. Well, I've watched a couple things because I took a plane. So saw Gringo. That was actually well done. Nash Edgerton, which is, I think, Joel Edgerton's brother, and he's in the movie. It follows a guy who's basically sent to Mexico, and he decides to make a change in his life. He finds out everything's falling apart. He's being lied to by his business partners. His wife is cheating on him, and he decides to find a way out of his life. And that's all I want to say, because it's kind of, if you watch the trailer, you think you know everything that's going to happen, and it actually goes a different way. So I don't want to say anything more about it, but it was actually really good. Gringo. Then I saw First Man, where you have the gorgeous Ryan Gosling playing Neil Armstrong. Damien Chazelle's new movie should be beautiful. Should be wonderful. Has Claire Foy as his wife. It's telling the story of the first man on the moon getting there. You know, how they went through all the motions. They made the missions. Fails. Then they have success. It's boring as hell. It's just, man, it's like 30 minutes too long. It's paced poorly. The camera is so jittery. It's like Jason Bourne is doing the filming. It's so shaky. Fine when you're in the cockpit and you're going through, you know, they're trying to get that effect of going through space or what it's like to be on a rocket. I understand it then. Man, then it's really, really exciting. It's really exhilarating. But then when they're on land and he's talking to his kids, why is the camera still shaking? I mean, is there an earthquake? is he having a flashback to being in the rocket? It got to the point where it was so annoying to watch that it just bothered me. The last half hour is wonderful when they're finally, you know, the mission to the moon and landing on the moon and everything else. It's wonderful. It's beautifully shot. Then the shaking cam doesn't bother me because it's actually done for effect as opposed to just because. But there's just too much of it. It drug on way too long. It really deserved to be about 30 minutes too shy. I'd give it like $4. I mean, I really just did not enjoy it. So I can't recommend it. So that's why it's not going to win the Oscars, because I said so. Well, sorry, Damien.
As long as you say so.
I will go and rewatch La La Land so I can wash the taste of First Man away.
So beautiful.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can always join our Facebook group. We always put the topic in. Next week, we'll have a new one, and you can find it in our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We're also on Twitter, at BuyPopcorn, and our site is TheHollywoodOutsider.com. You ever want to email us? feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Be sure to subscribe. There's Apple Podcast. If you want to leave us a review, that would be great. Google Podcast, Stitcher, anything else. Just find it. Help us out. You can also find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk, and her new podcast coming soon, Veronica's Marshmallows.
That'd be it.
And you can find me on my other podcast, Smirk and the Blacklist Exposed, which is coming back soon as well. That's going to do it, guys. We are out. First time together in a couple weeks. John, yes. Are you a comeback next week?
I don't know. Will you let me come back?
No, you're out. Amanda, you come back next week?
I don't think I'm invited.
You're welcome.
No, oh, okay.
You come
back. See you
back.
Next week.
Just no Grey's Anatomy talk. And,
no Buffy.
And no more creepy Buffy talk. John, you're welcome. You can come back.
I'll be back then.
You didn't even fight for it, man. You're just like, no, I want to come back. You didn't say nothing. You're just like, oh, okay. You just gave up. Put some stank on it.
I don't got it.
Right. He just gave up again. He's like, I don't really want to fight for this.
You know what he does well? Quit. He quits fantastic. All right, well, remember the next time you go to the theater, buy popcorn.